Blog Talk Radio.
He missed! Step up now! Look at everybody! And he won! They got us! Indiana got us!
Oh! Oladipo!
Ha ha! Swindell all the way outside to Watford. Three on the way! Oh! It went in! It went in! And Indiana wins the ball game! Christian Watford with a three!
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
This is Indiana, yeah, we do it big. Bustin' on the Big Ten, you know what it is.
To another victorious episode of the Assembly Call, where tonight Indiana defeated Ball State 101-53 at home at the Assembly Hall. It was, there's really no other word to use to describe tonight's game but just domination. That's what Indiana did. It was actually a semi-close game early on. It was 21-13 Indiana at the under eight minute timeout. And between 8 minute timeouts in the first half and in the second half, Indiana scored 59 points and just absolutely obliterated the Ball State Cardinals, who, you know, like Andy Bottoms alluded to in his preview today, you know, they're not necessarily a good team, but he didn't think they were quite this bad either. So for Indiana to come out and do this tonight, it was a very impressive performance for the Hoosiers, and we will break it down tonight, as well as spend probably more time focusing on Tuesday's game against North Carolina than we will talking about the Hoosiers game tonight. And I'll be joined by Andy Bottoms here in a moment and our buddy Zach a little bit later. For tonight's banner moment for me, you know, what was most impressive is that, you know, it's easy to forget in a game that ended with Indiana winning 101-53 that the Hoosiers really came out a little bit sluggish. You know, I know Andy tweeted about it, that it was a bit of a slow start for Indiana, which has been something of a theme this season. Zach Osterman tweeted that, you know, it really looked like Indiana, you know, just didn't quite have it. And Tom Crean was really on the team early, even though they had a lead. You know, he was very intense, you know, barking at the guys, just really getting on them. You know, and Zach alluded to the fact that Crean might sense that something was a little bit off with the team. Whatever he did certainly worked because, you know, like I said, after that 8 minute timeout, Indiana just went nuts. I mean, you know, they scored the 59 points. They had a streak of, I think, 15 straight possessions with a score. They ended up, you know, up 50-19 at the end of the first half, and it was a 21-13 game at that under 8 minute timeout. So it was a great run, and it was great on both offense and defense. And we'll break down a few of the individual performances that really stood out. I mean, everybody really played well, but there were a few that stood out especially. But not a great opponent, but still a 101-53 win like we got tonight, where the team was really for about 15 to 20 minutes there, functioning at peak efficiency. It doesn't matter who the opponent is. I mean, there's layup lines that are less efficient than what Indiana was on offense tonight. And so it was just really an impressive performance, and I think a good one to build momentum heading into Tuesday's game against North Carolina. And with that said, let me bring in my co-host tonight, Andy Bottoms, who will give us his Bottoms line on tonight's performance. Andy, what'd you think?
Well, it wasn't too easy to get excited about it. I mean, obviously seeing everybody, you know, play so well was exciting, but it was not a great game to watch, I guess. And I think you and I were, you know, chatting during the game, and I'm trying to think what I said. Impressive yet nearly unwatchable at the same time was were my words. So I think that was that probably summed it up fairly well. I mean, for me, the thing that really stood out was Will Sheehy off the bench. You know, we talked about efficiency, and he was certainly efficient, 8 of 9 from the floor. His one shot was a missed three in transition that came right after I tweeted out something about really like him taking mid-range shots as opposed to, you know, jacking up threes, and then he, within seconds, jacked up a three, and that was his only miss of the game. So if nothing else, made me look smart for one of the, you know, few shots, for the only shot that he missed on the night. So I just thought he was really good and played, you know, took the shots that he's most effective at, was very good cutting to the basket, made a couple nice passes, grabbed six rebounds, and just thought it was one of his better games, if not his best game of the season so far. And a case where it seems like, you know, for the, you know, not really sure what Watford was going to do there after, you know, getting benched the one game and benched coming out of halftime in another, seems like this kind of settled back into the rotation where he's going to be that first guy off the bench. And if you can get performances like that from anybody coming off your bench, I think you're going to be in pretty good shape over the remainder of the season. So I thought he played exceptionally well tonight.
Well, and frankly, I like that, you know, because I know when we kind of discussed that, you know, Watford had that good game. Well, will they start bringing him in off the bench? You know, we know with Watford, Watford is so skilled, but he doesn't always bring the energy, and certainly Will always brings energy. And I think, to me, that's what you want in a guy coming off the bench, is a guy who's going to bring energy, you know, especially for a team like ours that has struggled sometimes coming out of the gate. And so, I think that fits better. So I've been glad to see him go back to that. But let's talk a little bit more about Will Shee. You know, obviously Ryan's not on the show tonight. I'm sure he would have many plaudits and probably choice words for Will after tonight, because this was really, I agree with you, I think this was one of Will's better games. But it was a vintage Sheehy performance, because he did so many things well. You know, he scored 19 points, he had six boards. You know, he cut so well. I tweeted out that he does some really dumb things, but he's also the smartest cutter on the team. You know, no one makes more smart basket cuts that create scoring opportunities either for himself or teammates than Will does. But, you know, in the midst of this great play, you know, he also had kind of that pull-up transition three that you don't really want to see. Tom Crean angrily benched him in the second half when he tried to take the Ball State guy one-on-one and then dribbled off his foot. You know, so it's funny because with Will, you know, you kind of get the good with the bad, but he's such, you know, he's an emotional player. And obviously the good outweighs the bad, but I just, you know, I thought tonight was just kind of that vintage Sheehy performance, but definitely a lot more good than bad, which is good to see, because I don't think, you know, Will's been pretty up and down through the first five games, you know, enough that, you know, we've even talked on the show, hey, maybe Remy Abel should be getting some of those minutes, you know, I mean, you know, Will kind of needs to get it together. And against a team like North Carolina, we're really going to need him playing well because of his athleticism. You know, I think, and this will kind of, you know, lead us into talking about that a little bit. But I think, you know, guys like Will, guys like Victor Oladipo, and they talked about this a little bit on the telecast, you know, Victor, you know, he has 13 points tonight, two boards, an assist, three steals. Not, you know, one of his, you know, more impressive stat line type games. But I think for a guy like Victor, you know, a game like this isn't the type of game where you really appreciate him. You know, you appreciate Victor more in games against the teams that have the better athletes, you know, teams like North Carolina, like we're going to be playing. Because those always seem to be the games where his defense really comes up big, where his athleticism means more, and where he ends up stuffing the stat sheet a lot more than he even does tonight. So, you know, as you look at Victor's performance, you know, tonight and just kind of how he's played overall and Will, you know, how important do you think they're going to be against a team like North Carolina coming in on Tuesday night?
I think Sheehy's going to be particularly important, because you saw tonight where he played a couple stretches where he was really the power forward in the lineup. And at those same times, I think Hollowell was typically the center, if you will. And so I think you'll see some of that against North Carolina. I think you're not really going to have a choice. You don't have a lot of big bodies there. North Carolina has a couple big guys inside, but not as experienced as what they've had in years past. So you might be able to, you know, to get away with that at times. So I think he's going to be especially critical there. And I think he's a guy that has, you know, enough toughness or edge or whatever, you know, kind of cliche term you want to throw out, where he kind of relishes those opportunities to try to guard somebody bigger who on paper may be supposed to, you know, take him inside and do some things there. So I think that's the kind of game he'll really be excited for. And again, I think both those guys get pretty jacked up for some of these big games. So I think, you know, should be a pretty crazy atmosphere at Assembly Hall and everything for Tuesday night's game. I think they'll both play pretty big roles. And Oladipo, I think, is always going to do that, just because he's typically going to be charged with defending one of the other team's better players. You'd have to think in this case that's probably, you know, Reggie Bullock, maybe P.J. Harrison, who are both, you know, good outside shooters from North Carolina. So he'll probably be matched up with one of those guys. And, you know, we'll look to slow them down a little bit. So he, you know, again, I think the big thing with both those guys is, you know, big game atmosphere. They really seem to bring, you know, they really seem to bring a lot of energy to those kinds of games. So I think they'll both be critical in that one. And it's interesting when you look at, you know, some of these things with Sheehy, and we kind of talk about Ronnie Abel, and you could look tonight and say, ah, he didn't really have a great game. And admittedly, he didn't really need to do a whole lot. And I think there's so much depth on the team with guys that can score, you're almost seldom going to get through a game where we can't, if we wanted to, say, well, what was wrong with this guy tonight? Because you just have enough guys that can step in and score. You know, Yogi only had 2 points tonight, but I didn't really feel like he played a bad game. He just didn't, you know, it didn't necessarily show up in the scoring column. So I think it's interesting. I think maybe I thought of that more when I was trying to think of what in the hell are we going to talk about after a 50-point win. But, you know, you're trying to find something to, you know, pick at or whatever, and I think you're going to find some of those things today where, you know, you have a few guys that didn't have a huge game, but I think that probably, you know, is going to be the case for everybody at one point during the season. So I guess speaks more to the depth than anything.
All right, we're going to bring our buddy Zach on here in just a minute because I know he has some thoughts on Jordan Hulls, who was really, really good in the first half, especially during that big run for Indiana. And the number is 646-716-6360 if you do want to call in. Feel free to talk about tonight's game and if you want to look forward to North Carolina, which we're going to start doing exclusively here in a few minutes. You know, again, feel free to do that. There is one guy, Andy, real quick I want to talk about before we go to Zach, and that's Maurice Creek, who I thought had probably his best sequence of the season in the first half. He knocked down a couple threes. He had a nice drive to the bucket. He had a couple nice defensive sequences. And, you know, and it was really nice to see. I saw a lot of people tweeting out, you know, Maurice Creek is, you know, was the new Matt Roth. And I think a lot of people were heading into the season thought that was going to be kind of the role he was going to fill, you know, that spot-up three-point shooter coming off the bench, you know, instant offense a little bit. You know, it was surprising to me to see him, you know, drive to the bucket and showing a little bit of lateral quickness and playing some good defense. But I also think, you know, the speed of the game helped him. And by that I mean, you know, Indiana wasn't facing obviously one of the more athletic opponents it's going to face. And I think Ball State made it relatively easy on him. I mean, he got some open looks. They didn't really, you know, put up much of a fight when he drove to the bucket. It was great to see, but is Maurice, do you think, just kind of watching him play, you know, how he's moving his athleticism at this point, do you think he's at the point where, you know, he can really help this team against its tougher opponents? You know, or is he still, you know, maybe a year away from being able to do that? You know, and I guess, can he fill that Matt Roth role this year?
I'm not sure the answer to those questions is actually the same. I think that I think he can fill the Matt Roth role, definitely, but I'm not necessarily sure he's ready to contribute in some of those bigger games. So that might be kind of a strange way to answer that question, but, you know, you really look to kind of figure out where he really is in the rotation. Against Georgia, he played 7 minutes. Against Georgetown, he played 2. And even in the Georgia game, you know, he missed a couple shots and came in. He did get some nice rebounds. I think it's just not an area when you're playing a tougher opponent and you're shortening down the rotation a little bit. I just don't think he's quite there yet. Now, that being said, you know, coming off these injuries, he's only going to get better as the season goes on, so maybe that changes. He's always been a guy, even when he was, you know, scoring at a high rate as a freshman, Crean was always quick to point out how good he was defensively and how he was leading the team in deflections and things like that. I think you saw some of those things today. Obviously, a big part of that is being able to move effectively and, you know, the lateral quickness and those kinds of things. And, you know, the reality is he's not going to get back to what he was before. But I think there'll be games when he comes in and will be able to play well and give productive minutes. I think it's probably a case where, you know, Crean will put him in, see what he does in the first few minutes. If he plays well, he's going to get a lot of run in that game. And if he doesn't, then maybe he won't. And I think that's not all that different in the way that Roth was last year. He came in and hit a few threes, you were going to see a lot of him. If he came in, struggled a little bit, either defensively or making shots, then he didn't play a whole lot the rest of the game. So in that regard, I think he's going to be used pretty similarly. But I guess I'm not ready to say, at the very least, based on how we've seen him used thus far, that he's a guy that's going to be, you know, heavily relied on in some of these bigger games to get any more than, you know, 4, 5, 6 minutes a game.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
I will say though, you know, the one thing I didn't really get to was, I mean, I think it's great to see him have the confidence in his, you know, in his legs to actually drive to the basket and not be content to just be a standstill shooter. So, you know, whatever defensive resistance there was or wasn't aside, I think it does show that he's becoming more confident in his own, you know, body and ability. So I think that's a good thing that at least maybe makes me think that he can grow into a larger role. So I didn't really address that part of what you said, but I thought that was at least worth noting, and a positive sign, if nothing else.
No, you're right. And I mean, no matter what happens, there's nothing as exciting to me as seeing him come in there and knock down threes. I mean, you know, we all know what the kid's been through, and he's fought through so many injuries and come back, and it's great to see him playing. And I hope he can, you know, step in and fill something like a Matt Roth role. And I still think there's going to be a game or two this year that he comes in and just has the hot hand and helps this team to a victory. You know, which is similar to what Matt Roth does. And if you have a guy like that who is your 9th, 10th, 11th guy off the bench who's filling that kind of a role, that shows how deep you are. And I mean, just look at the box score tonight. I mean, Indiana has 6 guys between 9 and 17 points scoring tonight. You know, and that balance is what makes this team, you know, just so dangerous. And second on that list in scoring was Jordan Hulls, who had 17 points. He was 7 of 10 from the field, 3 of 6 from 3-point range. You know, was terrific in the first half when Indiana really built their lead. Let's go to our buddy Zach now, when I was watching the game. Zach, I don't think you were at Assembly Hall tonight, were you?
No, I was not at Assembly Hall. I'm not making it back to Bloomington until tomorrow, actually.
Ah, okay. So home for the Thanksgiving break. Did you have a good one?
Yeah, it was pretty good. Nice to relax, but, you know, pretty ready to get back to Bloomington by now.
Yeah, that's always how I was whenever I left Bloomington. I was always ready to get right back. All right, so give me your impressions. I mean, Indiana, obviously, you know, 101-53, huge win. I know you said you had some thoughts on Jordan Hulls. What did you see from him tonight?
Yeah, well, as we all saw, you know, he came in, hit a bunch of huge shots, you know, some from well behind the arc in the first half particularly, you know, which is always great to see, but there's really not a lot left to discuss there. You know, we know he can do that. Pretty much everybody in the nation knows he can do that. But what I wanted to talk about and what I wanted to bring up was what that's going to do for the rest of the team going forward. And I think, you know, 2 nights before we play North Carolina, a top 10 team, you know, I think it's going to do great things having that outside threat. I mean, you know, somebody like Roy Williams, you know, having the game plan against the Hoosiers, and like you guys just said, all the guys that are capable of scoring and really taking over on any given night on the Hoosiers. Well, at this point, you know, we know that Jordan Hulls is going to play huge minutes. You know, his defense has been formidable, so, you know he's not going to be forced off the floor. And Roy Williams and the Tar Heels are going to have to pay attention to him. And I think in a game, you know, with big men like Cody Zeller and McAdoo for North Carolina down low, I think that's going to be huge, and I think it'll be huge, you know, throughout Big Ten play and all the big games the Hoosiers have the rest of the year. You know, as long as Jordan Hulls is on the floor, you know, every team that we play is going to have to pay attention to him. And I think that's one thing a lot of fans, including myself, were wondering going into this year, you know, not only how much, you know, how many minutes would he play, but how effective would Hulls be? I remember in the exhibition game when I was at Assembly Hall this year against Indiana Wesleyan, he wasn't very involved in the offense at all, didn't score any points, and, you know, the worries pretty much started there. You know, is this Yogi Ferrell's offense completely? And although, like we said so many times, how the offense is running through Yogi, you know, and even Remy now, it's, you know, it's still at least partially Jordan's offense, and that's great to see. I think that's really going to go a long way. You know, it's a college offense. It's not an NBA offense. You need the guy who's in there really just to shoot. And even though he can do, you know, a little bit more than that, which we all know, it's going to be really valuable to have him in there. You know, it's going to make it harder and harder for teams to double-team Cody Zeller with a consistent basis, you know, or even Christian Watford when he's having one of his big nights.
You know, you bring up a good point, Zach. And, Andy, I want to get your thoughts on this because – you know, coming into the season, the one guy whose role I was really, I guess, kind of questioning, like, how would it all play out was Jordan's. You know, for some of the exact reasons you talked about, Zach, you know, Yogi's coming in. He's going to take over the point guard duties. And, you know, obviously even though people thought, and rightly so, that Yogi's penetration ability would open up, you know, would free up Jordan on the wings to get some open looks and he wouldn't have to handle the ball as much. You know, again, we're talking about two, you know, shorter guards. Is one of them going to get kind of squeezed to the bench? Will that be Jordan? And I tell you what, you know, through 6 games, I mean, obviously, look, we know that Cody Zeller is the most important player on this team. And, you know, for my money in big games, Victor Oladipo is next, you know, just because of his athleticism and everything that he does. But, I mean, Jordan Hulls has been so important, and he was so great against Georgetown. And I think, you know, they mentioned on the broadcast tonight, you know, how he may be the smartest player in America. And, you know, I'm not sure that I would dispute that. And he's playing a lot smarter. Now, Andy, I remember, you know, early in the season last year, I remember us having some conversations that, you know, it's almost like a cliche. You know, people look at, you know, little Jordan Hulls, you know, the white kid from Bloomington, and they just kind of, they've always said throughout his career that he's, you know, smartest player on the floor, you know, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. But I think for a while, especially Jordan's first couple of years, you know, he rushed things and he made some bad decisions and he didn't always kind of get the offense where it needed to be. And I think part of that was just, you know, kind of having a lack of talent around him and having to kind of force things and having to maybe try, you know, it just kind of trying to overcome some shortcomings. And now that the talent has kind of caught up and he's in a role that's more well suited for him, you can really see that basketball intelligence, I think, come through to where he doesn't have to force things. And so he's able to make the right decision more often, which he's more often than not going to do. So, you know, Andy, just kind of piggyback on Zach's, you know, thoughts about Jordan Hulls and not only what he's meant to this team so far, which has obviously been a lot, but in a game like we have coming up against North Carolina, which is a bigger team, a more athletic team, is he going to be able to continue having these performances, getting the open looks to where he can continue to be such an important scoring option on this team?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the one thing that I would definitely echo that. And I think, you know, while he's played some with the ball in his hands still, I think he just hasn't had that pressure of having to be the distributor, but also trying to figure out when to get his own shots. Because, you know, a lot of the times I remember in some of the post games and after that, you know, Crean would continue to talk about he needs to shoot more. Well, when you're being relied upon to be the point guard or one of the primary ball handlers, that's a pretty delicate balance to try to, you know, strike and figure out how to do that. So I think now, you know, that piece of it, there's no longer any, you know, question there what his role is and what he needs to do and things like that. And I think it allows him to, you know, where he might have been thinking, hey, another guy should be cutting here. Now he is the guy that's cutting to the right spot. And Yogi's able to find him and other guys are able to find him. So I think that helps. And you look ahead to North Carolina a little bit, you know, for it's probably the easy comparison to draw. But you compare, you know, him to the kinds of guys who are on the Butler team, and they were able to hit 12 threes against North Carolina. You got a lot of, you know, Carolina wants to get on a run. They play at a fast pace. You got a lot of open floor scenarios, transition scenarios where he can go and try to spot up or, you know, find the right opening or, you know, take a shot fake to, you know, channel his inner Bob Knight and then, you know, get a guy flying at him and drive past him and make a nice mid-range shot or a nice, you know, pass or, you know, runner going to the basket. So I think you'll see some of those scenarios. I think in that game in particular, Carolina likes to play fast enough. You don't get into quite as many, you know, half-court situations where maybe his, you know, physical limitations from a height standpoint really come into play. I think he'll actually be able to take advantage of some of the openings that are created by the pace of the game, at least the way that North Carolina wants to play it.
Funny tweet from Dustin Doprag that just came through, who's at the IU press conference. Will Sheehy on Austin Etherington. He's probably at Qdoba right now. I was asking, Austin Etherington had the basket that put Indiana over the century mark. And I think what Qdoba gives, like, the first 100 fans, if Indiana scores 100 points, they get, you know, free Qdoba or something. Zach, are you disappointed that you're not in Bloomington to get your free Qdoba tonight?
I kind of am, but like you said, with playing a team like North Carolina, upbeat, fast tempo team like Indiana, I think it could be a scoring fest on Tuesday, so I'm going to cross my fingers for that.
I would not be that's a great segue as we, you know, lead in talking about IU North Carolina. I would not be surprised if it is a high scoring game like that. Now, are you going to be inside the hall?
Yes, I will be. I'll be actually sitting just three rows behind the student section. Pretty much in the student section. Just, you know, nice that don't have to wait in a long line, can just, you know, show up not too long before game time. Bloomington's going to be buzzing for it. You know, probably the closest thing to the Kentucky game of last year that we've had, you know, since maybe the Michigan State game of later in last season. Obviously not, you know, the magnitude of either of those games just yet, but nonetheless a pretty big game that, you know, everybody's looking forward to.
And what do you expect from this team? I mean, obviously, you know, we've seen Indiana have, you know, a few slow starts, but obviously they're 6-0 and they've risen to every challenge that's been presented, this obviously being the biggest one. What do you expect from this game? You know, I'm not sure that we really know about North Carolina. Obviously, they did not play great against Butler, you know, and they have a lot of guys who are filling new roles from last year. You know, is this a game where you're expecting Indiana to come out and get, you know, a 10-15 point victory? Do you think it's going to be, you know, kind of a much closer affair? What do you think we're going to see Tuesday night?
I think it'll be a close game throughout most of the ball game. You know, I don't think we're going to know you know, who the winner is, you know, with 15 minutes left in the second half or anything like that. You know, but at the same time, I do think IU is going to do everything they can to come out to a fast start. I really think they're going to rely on Victor Oladipo, you know, to get everybody excited, to get everybody pumped up, you know, the rest of the team, the fans, everybody around the team, even watching at home. I think they're really going to rely on him a lot. Will Sheehy, when he comes in off the bench, like you guys said earlier, an emotional player. Assembly Hall can definitely be an emotional place. I know you guys know that. I think they're going to rely on that emotion, that excitement, a lot. And, you know, obviously still try to stick to fix the basics, you know, Yogi, Holes, Zeller and whatnot. But I think they're going to – I think they're kind of going to need a spark plug, you know, and hopefully, you know, whether it's Vic or Sheehy, you know, maybe, you know, anybody else that comes in. As you guys know, there's tons of guys that can be a spark plug on this team, but I think they're going to look for something, you know, to assure that they can play the game at their pace, which we've said many times on the show this season already. It's huge for Indiana. You know, playing well in transition and really controlling the tempo. You know, it's an interesting matchup in that sense because North Carolina has the ability to do that as well. But, you know, if Indiana can get off to a fast start against them, I think they could be in really good shape. You know, we saw what getting off to a huge start did for Butler against them in Maui, and, you know, that definitely worked.
All right, now, Andy, let's go to you, and let's kind of talk some specifics, because I know that, you know North Carolina as well as anybody. You know, just in terms of matchups, you know, where are the areas that Indiana can exploit in this North Carolina team, and where are maybe, you know, if North Carolina is going to come into Assembly Hall and spring the upset, how will that happen? You know, what will that look like if they are able to come in and beat us?
Well, I think the first area you look to an area that IU has an advantage is with Zeller in the post. And obviously that's an easy statement to make. But when you really look at North Carolina, they don't have a lot of bulk inside, and they don't have a lot of experience inside, for sure. So, you know, when you really look at their roster they've got, I think, you know, four guys over 6'7". You know, they got James Michael McAvee was one, so we'll talk about him more. He's really their leading scorer. He plays more of the four for them. And I'm not sure that it's a scenario where they want to get him matched up on Zeller and run the risk of getting him into foul trouble. So that leaves you with really a couple guys who are options. So Joel James is a freshman, I believe a redshirt freshman, who started a number of these games. He's a little bigger, 6'10", 260, but, you know, relatively inexperienced. And based on who North Carolina has played so far, really haven't played a largely talented big man. So, you know, that could really be, you know, problematic for him. And then the other guy that they have is Desmond Hubert, who's a sophomore who hasn't played a great deal either. So you look at those guys, and the other guy they have over 6'7", weighs 185 pounds, so I'm not sure he's going to be used to try to guard Zeller. So I think that's an area where, you know, they'll try to obviously get Zeller the ball in half-court sets and try to look to exploit his ability to get out and run in what should be a fast-paced game. So I think that's one area there. The other, you know, is really you look at three-point defense. Generally speaking, North Carolina's three-point defense has been pretty good on the season. They rank pretty highly. Obviously, against Butler, that wasn't the case. And generally, you know, they haven't played a lot of great teams. You know, they played Gardner Webb, Florida Atlantic, Long Beach State, who's not quite as good this year as they've been in years past, Mississippi State, who's just awful, and Chaminade. So they really haven't been tested a whole lot other than, you know, maybe with Butler in terms of a team that's able to knock down shots on the outside. So I think that's another area where you'll look to see IU try to take advantage. And the other there is really turnover. They've got a freshman point guard, Marcus Page, who, you know, obviously is going to go through some growing pains. Has a pretty high turnover rate at this point in his career. And really as a team, they've turned the ball over, you know, quite a bit. They play at a fast pace, and to a certain extent they're willing to accept the fact that they'll turn the ball over a bit. But, you know, that's one area where, again, if IU's defense is improved, it's something that you'd like to see them be able to take advantage of. On the other end, you know, North Carolina, one of their, you know, something I've read about them, Jeff Eisenberg, who runs the Yahoo Sports blog, the Dagger, their college basketball blog, lives out on the West Coast and did kind of an all-access thing with Long Beach State in preparation for that game. And so he basically, you know, kind of transcribed their scouting report on one of his posts, which is, you know, kind of worth reading for anybody in preparation. But the first thing on the list was their best offense is a missed shot. Doesn't matter what they run, they throw it up, miss, their offense starts because they all crash the boards and look for second, third, and fourth opportunities. So that bears out pretty well with the fact that they've, you know, grabbed over 43% of their misses so far this season and really have used that to, you know, to get a lot of their offense. So that's an area where IU has to be really careful, particularly with James Michael McAdoo that we talked about earlier. That's probably a matchup that Watford will take at the start. And so, you know, he came out and had another double-double tonight. It's going to be really important for him to hit the defensive glass again and keep him off the, keep him off the backboard. Because they do like to get on run. They're going to throw up shots and kind of get you in more scrambled scenarios where you got to find, you know, you might have to find your guy to block out and things like that. So I think that's one area. You know, the other thing they do fairly well offensively, at least have done better, is shoot the three themselves. They've got a few guys who can shoot it from out there. PJ Hairston is one who struggled with the shot quite a bit last year, has shot the ball better this season. Reggie Bullock, who's a little like Creek in the sense that he's coming off of a knee injury and really has, you know, developed into a little bit more of a standstill shooter. He can drive a little bit, but has taken about two-thirds of his shots from behind the arc. So he's a guy who's hitting over 50% from out there. So you get those guys that you really want to run at. Leslie McDonald's another guy, same way, he's shooting 48% from three. So, you know, again, kind of going back to the scouting report, one of the things they focused on was trying to run with those guys and make them put the ball on the floor. I think that would be important, too. You know, we've seen, in the Georgetown game, at least during stretches, that IU gave up some pretty open looks there. So, again, something to look for and you know, make sure they don't get hot from out there and start, raining threes on them. But I think those are at least a handful of things to look for. One other quick thing to throw out, for as good as IU has been at getting to the free throw line, their free throw rate's one of the better ones in the country, I think, was tops in the country coming into tonight. North Carolina doesn't draw a lot of fouls. Which is a little bit odd for a team that, you know, really wants to get out and run and kind of attack the basket. But, you know, their free throw rate's one of the 10 lowest in the country coming into the game. So definitely not an area where, you know, they have a huge advantage. It's something that, you know, IU needs to keep from putting them on the line. They don't shoot the ball off the free throw line when they get there either. So that seems like another area where IU would have an advantage if they can, you know, continue what they've done so far in terms of being aggressive and getting put on the free throw line.
So let's kind of provide a little bit of context for this game, you know, kind of comparing where we were at this time last year to where we are now. Because last year at this time, you know, we were getting ready to play Kentucky. And I think it's a game, obviously, that was met with a lot of anticipation, but I think it was also a lot of Indiana fans hoping that we would win. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, we were undefeated. You know, I think we all felt good coming into that game, but we were hoping to win. And obviously we did, and it was, you know, ridiculous and remarkable and all those many things that we all remember. But the difference now is, you know, you've got this North Carolina team coming in. Look, they're not as good as Kentucky last year, but it's still North Carolina. It's still a top-10 team. But I think we're all rightfully expecting to win, which we should. We're the number one ranked team in the country. We're ranked higher than them. But at the same time, we're not even to December yet. And as we know, you know, preseason rankings don't really mean that much. I mean, it's a nice general kind of gauge for where your program is, which is why I think the number one ranking was important for Indiana. But we don't really know who's number one, who's five, who's 15 yet. We haven't seen all these teams play yet. So, Andy, in your estimation, as you look at this game, is this, you know, especially for IU fans who haven't yet seen North Carolina play, is this a game that Indiana fans should be expecting to win now? I mean, should we be expecting to win these games against top-10 teams in Assembly Hall?
I mean, I think you have to. If you're, you know, you think that you're the number one team in the country, I think you should feel like you should go undefeated at home. And, you know, I do think there's a lot of, you know, North Carolina obviously lost a lot of guys from last year's team, you know, with John Henson and, you know, the other Zeller, one of the other Zellers, and Harrison Barnes and the point guard whose name, Kendall Marshall. You know, so they really lost a lot. And so there's, you know, a lot of new faces going to be coming into a pretty tough atmosphere. Carolina they have played one true road game. They played at Long Beach. And won that game by about 15 points. And, you know, again, Long Beach State, not quite as good as they were a year ago, but a challenging road environment, you know, and one they passed pretty quickly. I think that it would be, you know, as much as I think they should expect to win, I think it would be foolish to just look and say, hey, this team lost to Butler, IU's going to kill them, because I don't necessarily think that's the case either. You know, Butler obviously shot the ball really well, and that was, you know, certainly a testament to what they did offensively, but I wouldn't necessarily take that away and say, well, this is a game that IU's going to win by, you know, 15 points, because Butler was up by almost 30 at one point and ended up winning by 11. So probably somewhere in the middle there. I definitely think it's a game that IU should win. I think that there's enough inexperience, and North Carolina relies quite a bit on their depth, and they got 10 guys that are, you know, playing double-digit minutes. That's something that not a lot of teams can match, but IU probably could. You know, obviously they haven't played, you know, Creed those minutes every night, but if he needed to step in and play 10, 12 minutes in this game, he certainly could. You know, you might see a little more time from Etherington. He played more tonight, obviously, based on the spread of the game. So I think that's one, you know, area they usually use to their advantage that IU will be able to neutralize to a certain extent. So, you know, I guess I definitely take it as one I would expect IU to win, based on, you know, how they've played so far this season and the personnel. I think they play a style that suits what IU wants to do pretty well. They would like to get out and run, have one of the, you know, 10 fastest tempos in the country. And while IU's isn't quite up that high yet, it was pretty similar to the pace at which the game was played tonight. So I think that's a pace that IU's comfortable with. And, you know, so long as they can get back on defense and really, you know, not give up a ton of offensive rebounds, I feel pretty good about what they'll be able to do. But will not be an easy game by any stretch of the imagination, but one I think people should expect to win. If you have Final Four and national championship aspirations, it's definitely a game, you know, more so than probably other years when you might play North Carolina, that you would and should expect to win.
Yeah, and that game is Tuesday, and it starts at 9:30 Eastern time, and I believe that'll be televised on ESPN. Andy, I think you're going to have a complete ACC Big Ten Challenge preview out this week, right?
Yeah, I'm working on that. I'm about, I don't know, maybe halfway done. A number of the teams played today, so trying to go through each game. Some giving a little more attention to you than others, so those of you who are really interested in that Penn State-Boston College matchup, don't get your hopes up for that. But, yeah, so trying to kind of go through and look at some of the games. You know, this is IU's one of the big ones. It's preceded by Michigan-North Carolina State, which should be a really good game, too.
Yeah, no, that'll definitely be a good game. And, Zach, I know you're still on here. Hang around, because you can fill in for Ryan's spot on Final Thoughts, which we'll get to here in a few minutes. I do, Andy, I want to talk real quick kind of generally. This is something I was thinking about earlier today. You know, as we see, you know, Duke obviously, you know, had a great weekend out at the Atlantis tournament, you know, winning that. And you know, we know teams like Michigan State, you know, they always schedule very, very tough opponents in the non-conference. Obviously, Indiana's non-conference schedule this year is not filled with a whole lot of tough teams. I mean, the Georgetown game, obviously this game coming up against North Carolina, the Butler game, but this isn't exactly a Michigan State schedule that we're facing here. And a big part of that is because, you know, the Kentucky game, we don't have that. But in general, A, do you think it's at all a negative, you know, that Indiana doesn't have more tests in its non-conference? Is that going to at all come back to bite it during the, you know, once it comes time for March? And B, in the future, do you expect to see, you know, now that Tom Crean kind of has the program back, do you expect him to start going more with the Tom Izzo model of scheduling a lot tougher opponents in the non-conference schedule?
Yeah, I guess to answer the first part of that, I'm a little disappointed. I think that, you know, obviously the Kentucky thing was one you'd kind of, obviously you couldn't count on it because they didn't have the, you know, the contract finalized to keep that going. But that was a game you kind of counted on year in, year out. You're always going to get, you know, a good, you know, ACC game, just so happens to be, you know, the year that IU hosts it. I think, you know, the Legends Classic, the field in some ways didn't turn out quite how people might have thought, at least the way that it was for IU, who played the, you know, kind of worst of the four major teams in the first game in Brooklyn. So, it's not great in that regard. The thing that I like about it, for the games that are a little bit tougher, it's been able to really be a variety of styles of play. So the venues might not be all that different. A lot of games, you know, in Assembly Hall, the Butler game, you know, obviously a neutral court game in Indianapolis, and these couple in the Legends Classic, really the only games that are not on IU's home floor. So that part I don't love, but the different styles that they'll see, the different types of teams, I think is good. You know, Georgetown was a really tough team to play, particularly with, you know, a day to prepare. Tough defensively, play a different style on the offensive end and really slow it down in that more Princeton-style offense. You know, and then you turn around 2 games later, you're going to play North Carolina, who plays as fast as anybody and really wants to get out and run. And then you've got a game coming up against Butler, who, we obviously saw when they played North Carolina, you know, the toughness is really a trademark there on the defensive end and rebounding, and it really doesn't matter, you know, how many stars were next to your recruits rating when you play them. And so those are going to be tough games for their own reasons. So I think if you try to look for kind of the silver lining out of that type of scheduling, I think it has worked out a little bit in that regard and probably worked out better long-term to play Georgetown than it did to play UCLA in Brooklyn. So kind of a mixed bag for me there. As far as going forward, I guess I would have to think he would start to schedule a little bit more that way. I'd certainly like to see it. I think it's a little bit hard to transition directly from the mode of we just need wins that they were in for so long into, okay, now I want to go out and play anybody. Because certainly there were probably opportunities to play people over those first few years that IU, I would imagine, turned down, in the interest of trying to, you know, build wins and build a little momentum with the program that now you kind of got to get back and try to negotiate some of those deals and those kinds of things again. So I think you will see a turnaround. I think if nothing else, you'll try to see a few more road games. This year, a little bit of an anomaly. There were, you know, at least a couple last year that gave some indication of how this team might fare in those settings. So it's something I would look forward to if it turns out that way. Hard to tell, but you'd think Green coming from, you know, the Tom Izzo coaching tree or whatever you want to call it would be one who's going to be apt to do that.
Yeah, well, and, you know, just in case we aren't quite toughened up once March rolls around, I didn't even realize this. Here are the final 6 games that we have in the Big Ten schedule. Starting February 16th, home against Purdue, which is always going to be a tough game, and I expect Purdue to be much better by that point in the season when their freshmen have had a chance to mature a little bit. Then at Michigan State, at Minnesota, which Williams Arena is always a nightmare, home against Iowa, home against Ohio State, at Michigan. So, I mean, those are 6 really tough games to end the year with, and that's, you know, that's kind of the, I guess, the counter-argument to anything that does come up against the non-conference schedule is, look, once we hit Big Ten play, I mean, it's almost night in, night out, you know, a really tough game against a potential, you know, either a top 10 team or a team that, you know, could very easily be a top 25 team. So, you know, this team will be plenty toughened up by March. But I agree with you. You know, I do expect to see Indiana start to schedule a lot tougher with the non-conference schedule moving forward, and hopefully that also includes getting Kentucky back on the schedule. But we will see about that. Well, let's kind of wrap things up here for tonight. I think there's not much more to talk about as far as tonight's game goes, where, again, Indiana wins 101-53 in just absolutely dominating fashion against Ball State. And I think everybody's excited for Tuesday night. Andy will obviously have a preview of that game and his ACC Big Ten Challenge preview coming up probably tomorrow or sometime early in the week before Tuesday night's game. So let's go to final thoughts, get everybody's lasting impressions of tonight's game and what you're looking for coming Tuesday night. Zach, you can lead us off, buddy.
Yeah, well, for me, I guess what I would want to say is really just to all the IU fans and students that will be going to the game on Tuesday, and that's to, as cheesy as it may sound, bring that Qdoba excitement to Assembly Hall on Tuesday. It was awesome seeing one of the last possessions of the game, such excitement, such enthusiasm from the crowd, even if it was because they're getting for Qdoba. Let's bring that rock environment out in full force against North Carolina. Let's help the offense get going against the Tar Heels. Get off to a quick start, which, as we've said many times, we need pretty bad, and go from there, and hopefully take care of a team that, as you guys have said, we all think we should beat.
All right, Andy, you're up.
Well, I guess the one thing that stood out for me tonight, and we were talking to each other a little bit about this before we got on, was the number of kind of quiet nights that people had. And I guess that's easy to say when you're, you know, beating somebody by 50, but Zeller had 15 points and 8 rebounds, and I think we've hardly talked about him on the show. Holtz, we talked about a little bit, but he had 17. You know, Oladipo, we touched on, had 13. And Watford had another double-double, 11 points, 10 rebounds in 24 minutes. And I thought played a fairly good game. You know, missed some threes, but overall had another solid game. And I think you know, as you look ahead to the game on Tuesday night, he's got to be one of the most important players that IU has going into that one. In particular, just because he, you know, he's going to be charged for at least part of the time with defending McAdoo and trying to keep him off the offensive glass. And we've talked a lot about how important it is for Watford to, you know, hit the defensive boards and play well in that regard. And so he's coming off of two straight double-doubles. I think if he makes it a third, I'll feel really good about how IU's, you know, chances to win that game will be shaping up. And, you know, again, I think somebody who has played well in big games in the past that we talked about before, and this certainly fits the bill, and look forward to an exciting, you know, environment that I think, you know, people have been waiting around for a little bit with, you know, based on some of the opponents so far in Assembly Hall. So it should be by far the loudest and most raucous crowd come Tuesday night. So looking forward to the game.
No, I expect the crowd to be wonderful. And I think, I mean, if you can't get excited about a college basketball game with, you know, with Indiana and North Carolina on the same floor, I mean, two teams that have 10 championships between them, just some of the best, some of the greatest history in all of college basketball. I mean, it's just, it's going to be wonderful. And to me, you know, I agree with you, Andy. This is a huge spot for Christian Wofford. And, you know, one thing that I think we've all come to know about him over his career is you can count on Christian to step up in big games. I mean, he sometimes doesn't always bring it in games that, you know, the team is quote-unquote supposed to win or against lesser opponents. But especially as he's, you know, gotten older, he's really stepped it up in the big games. And we saw it last year, I mean, against Kentucky, against Michigan State. You know, he had some of his biggest moments. And I think, you know, if he is, you know, the big-game Christian that we've all come to know and appreciate, I think it's going to be really tough for North Carolina to beat us if Christian's playing like that. And the other guy that I think is huge, I mean, you know, look, Cody's got to, you know, he has to come play well. Jordan needs to make shots. Yogi's got to play within himself and not, you know, let the emotion kind of get to him in his first real big game as Indiana's point guard. But the other guy is Victor. And, you know, I kind of expect this to be Victor's coming out party this year. You know, I think this would be one of those games where he really stuffs the stat sheet. You know, and he, more than anybody on our team, really feeds off the emotion of the crowd. And so I think, you know, I expect one of those vintage, you know, 13, 14 points, 7-8 boards, you know, 3 or 4 assists, 3 or 4 steals. I really think it's going to be a big game from Victor. And I think if we see, you know, the Victor and the Christian that we saw in big games last year, this is a game that Indiana should win. And it's, you know, it's great to say that again. You know, you got a top 10 team, a legend of college basketball coming into Assembly Hall. We're no longer hoping to win it. We're expecting to win it. And that's a testament to where Tom Crean's built this program. But hey, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be a fun game Tuesday night. You know, we'll finally get to see, you know, Assembly Hall. It won't be quite at Kentucky levels. I'm not sure any game, you may never see another game that's at quite that level. You know, but it'll be close to that. And it's going to be a lot of fun on ESPN. And, of course, as always, we will be here, hopefully with another victorious episode of the Assembly Hall. That's certainly what we expect. You know, hey, let's see what happens. But I think the Hoosier team is ready. I think tonight's performance showed that this team is locked in. And I think that's why you saw Tom Crean so intense at the start of the game, even though I think, you know, he knew that we could probably beat Ball State with 50%, you know, focus and effort and not even having our edge tonight. That's why he was so on this team, you know, maybe sensing that something wasn't quite there. And, you know, what was the end result? You know, we went from 21 to 13 to 101-53. I think that shows you a team that is locked in, that is playing together, that is focused. That's exactly what we need with North Carolina coming in here on Tuesday night. Hopefully we'll see a similar performance. And if we do, then we'll see another IU victory. And that's, I think, what we all expect. To everybody who listened in tonight, thank you very much. To everyone who listens in tomorrow and in the ensuing days on iTunes, thank you as well. And you can check us out on iTunes, assemblycall.com/iTunes, and you can subscribe to us there. Follow Andy on Twitter, at Andy Bottoms. He will have his Big Ten ACC Challenge preview up this week. And other than that, we will see us on Twitter, at Assembly Call, and we will see you Tuesday night after Indiana, North Carolina. Have a great night, everybody.
Watford for the win! Yeah!